It's Tuesday, the 17th of September, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, an attack on a Saudi oil facility sends global prices soaring, raising fears of a potential conflict. We'll hear from the journalist and Middle East analyst Bill Law.
The Iranians are saying, we didn't do it. Donald Trump has pointed the finger. Mike Pompeo has pointed the finger. The Saudis are pointing the finger at Iran.
Plus, North Korea invites President Trump to Pyongyang. Mumbai lays out the red carpet for Bollywood's best and brightest. And Switzerland prepares for a referendum on whether to become carbon neutral. I'm Carlotta Ribello in Los Angeles. The Monocle Minute starts now. The price of oil is continuing to surge following an attack on Saudi Arabia's largest production facility at the weekend. Prices had increased by 20% late yesterday, while the attack cut the global output by 5%. Bill Law is a journalist and Middle East analyst. He's at our studios in London. Bill, the United States is blaming Iran for the attack. On Monday afternoon, the Saudi-led coalition that's fighting in Yemen gave a news conference where they blamed Iran too. What do we actually know for sure about what happened here?
Well, what we know is that this was a very sophisticated attack. It pinpointed really the heart of Saudi Aramco's facilities, has inflicted massive damage. The Saudis haven't been clear yet the extent of the damage. I think it's important that we find out just how massive that damage is, because the longer it goes on, the repair work goes on, the more damaging it will be both the Saudi economy and to the world supply of oil. Yes, the Iranians are saying, we didn't do it. Donald Trump has pointed the finger. Mike Pompeo has pointed the finger. The Saudis are pointing the finger at Iran. There is certainly a part of the Iranian regime that would very much like to provoke some sort of military response. The IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard Corps, would like to provoke some sort of military response, most likely from the Americans. There is equally that side of the Iranians that do not want any kind of military response, do not want to provoke it. So we're seeing a kind of tension being played out in Iran. Equally, we're seeing an American president who on the one hand is saying we're locked down and ready to rumble, and then saying we'll have to wait and see, and we'll wait for the Saudis to tell us which way to go on this, which is a very interesting thing for the president of the world's most powerful military to be, in a sense, conceding American foreign policy and decisions about whether or not you take military action to effectively the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Iran maintains that it was not involved in the attacks. If, for argument's sake, it wasn't them, is there any indication of who else it could have been?
Well, the Houthis say it's us. They immediately took credit for it. Experts are saying that's a tough call, because could drones actually make that sort of a flight? Some drones apparently can. There is a possibility that the Shia militias inside Iraq carried out the attack, perhaps with or without the direct knowledge of the Iranians. Other than the Iranians themselves, possibly the Houthis, I think a more likely possibility is Hashd-e Shabaab, Iranian Shia militia, who had been hit by the Israelis in August, and this might have been a retaliation for that Israeli hit, which allegedly was sponsored by and funded by the Saudis.
Now, tensions between the United States and Iran seems to be constantly at risk of boiling over. How much of an escalation is this? Could this realistically spark a broader conflict?
It's definitely got that potential. However, I think that pretty much everyone is thinking, we don't want a war. We do not want this to boil over. We need to step back. And I think we're seeing that surprisingly from Donald Trump, which is, you know, interesting. He's showing himself not really that keen for military action by pushing the ball into the Saudi court. And I think that's because his base does not want the United States to get involved in any major confrontation in the Middle East, indeed any major confrontation anywhere in the world. They want America out of foreign adventures and foreign wars. The Saudis themselves, they certainly are in no position to carry out any kind of military action, because it would have disastrous consequences for them. The Emiratis do not want any military action. Indeed, none of the Gulf states want military action. Even Netanyahu, who's been pushing and pushing, is being a bit quiet on this front, just ahead of an election. Of course, the election is ongoing right now. So I don't think this will lead to any major military activity on either side, But make no mistake, this does raise the ante significantly. And I think it is still a very dangerous situation.
Bill Law, always good to get your insights. Thank you. A newspaper in South Korea reports that North Korea's Kim Jong-un has written to U.S. President Donald Trump and invited him to visit Pyongyang. John Everard was Britain's ambassador to North Korea, and he told Monocle that a visit by a U.S. president would likely prompt an enormous display of might by Kim's regime.
North Korea would put on a huge circus. I mean, this would be about as good as it gets for Kim Jong-un. He's already established himself as the first ever North Korean leader to sit down with a serving U.S. president. To persuade a serving U.S. president to visit Pyongyang would just wow his domestic audience, and in particular, wow all the crusty old generals who are starting to get a bit restive about his failure to deliver on things like sanctions relief. So the North Koreans will be pressing very hard. It emerged that they were pressing very hard for the summit that eventually took place in Singapore to take place in Pyongyang. So this is something they've been pushing for a while. Is he going to go? A lot of people near the top of the State Department will be throwing themselves across him saying, Mr. President, just don't do this. And although he's not known to listen to State Department advice systematically, I think as he gets closer and closer to the 2020 election, there will be parts of the great Trump brain that will be thinking, is there a downside in this? Am I going to be made a fool of? Are people going to criticize me? Might this backfire? And I suspect that is one of the reasons why we've only learnt about this letter, delivered apparently late August, only learnt about it now. Whether this comes to anything, of course, we still don't know. The White House appears to be still chewing it over.
To Mumbai now, where red carpets are unfurling in a celebration of the world's biggest film industry.
This week sees Mumbai host the Bollywood Oscars, with the industry's biggest players descending on the city to celebrate the thriving Hindi film industry, which grew 2.2% in 2018 to become worth an estimated $2.5 billion. This boom can in part be attributed to the arrival of major online streaming services in the country, who have been investing in original Indian content. Netflix, for example, recruited Bollywood superstars Nawazuddin Siddiqui and Saif Ali Khan for its series Sacred Games, as well as teaming up with producer Karan Johar to make films and series exclusively for its platform. With nearly 1,800 titles released last year, India is the biggest film industry in the world, and tapping into this prospering market, as Netflix has shown, is certainly a wise investment.
Finally today, Monocle's news editor Peter Firth looks at a referendum to decide whether Switzerland should be carbon neutral and if it might be a breath of fresh air for everyone.
Naming an environmental campaign the Glacier Initiative might have presented something of a communications error. Fortunately for those in Switzerland arguing that an emissions target of zero by 2050 be enshrined in the country's constitution, there appears to be no danger of inertia. After launching a petition for the above, the Swiss Association for Climate Protection has collected more than 120,000 signatures in under 5 months. Under Switzerland's system of direct democracy, which decrees that plebiscites may be held around 4 times per year on issues ranging from gambling laws to the building of minarets, this constitutes enough public attention to bring the matter to a national yes-no vote. Will it work? Probably not. There is considerable red tape to overcome before a referendum can be called. Meanwhile, the government made its own pledge in August, which was exactly the same as the SACP target, but with none of those inconvenient legally binding bits. The Federal Council has said that the country's CO2 could be cut by 95% with existing technologies and green energy, but it has yet to unfurl any concrete policies that could make the target. Without the force of law to strong-arm governments to act, announcements of this kind are a load of hot air.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, that's monocle.com. I'm Carlotta Ribello in Los Angeles. The Monocle Minute returns on Wednesday.